I have the first question for Dr. Kumman. What is the best objective quantitative way to assess fluid overload? Serial measurements of CRP, BNP levels, fluorescent salt, MRI?
Yeah, well, this is a very interesting question. Actually, what would be the best way to assess fluid overload? I think there are different ways to assess fluid overload. It depends also a little bit on what you're interested in. At this moment, I personally feel that for clinical purposes, actually to have an additional risk profile, I think bioimpedance is actually quite a good tool. It has been validated at this moment in thousands of patients, and we know that it is very strongly related to outcome. It does not necessarily always predict your tolerance to fluid removal, and there where it can become a little bit difficult there, because as I addressed in my talk, patients who are inflamed or who have cardiac failure, they can really not tolerate fluid removal often very well. And in this way, I would not advocate actually using bioimpedance as a kind of gold standard in which we really have to attain a zero, because in the patients who are very susceptible, this can also, and we don't really know this yet because we don't have the studies, can lead to maybe hemodynamic instability, cardiac stunning, etc. So personally, I think we should use it as an important risk marker, and it tells you that bioimpedance that something is wrong with the patients, and after that, you will have to look into the patient, do careful clinical analysis. Personally, I like to do, for instance, vena cava echography to see to look at the tolerance to fluid removal, pretend to predict the tolerance to fluid removal, but you could also, for instance, use blood volume measurements for that. For research tools, in the end, I think it would be incredibly interesting to do salt MRIs, etc., but you cannot at this moment perform this in daily clinical practice. So personally, in practical point of view, apart from clinical examination, I use bioimpedance as a risk predictor. And after that, blood volume measurements or vena cava measurements actually as a method to assess the more intravascular fluid overload or tolerance to fluid removal. BNP levels are also very interesting, but also are a different kind of risk predictor, a very powerful risk predictor, but they also take into account cardiac overload and cardiac failure. So it's a little bit more complicated to assess directly fluid overload from BNP levels, because they can mean either fluid overload leading to left ventricular dilatation or cardiac failure itself. So these should always be interpreted, I think, together with an echocardiography.
Thank you.
So it says, do you or your staff use the new RBB ranges? If so, what is your staff experience? So it's not new RBB ranges. It's just observational data, of course. And we actually present these findings to the staff in the RRI clinics. To see also, to know the feedback they will have with this relative low volume levels, and how we can potentially use them once this is, we can test this out. For my experience and the staff that I've been around the clinics, they say it could be easily used, because now we're using the profiles and all these things. So it's a lot of things when it comes to reading relative low volume curves. So it, like I show, it's a lot of variability. So just to say, you just need to put the patients here, it is a lot of difficulties when it comes to say, okay, just follow this or do this. So I think for the staff, and what I've seen in the clinics is this, the feedback is, it can be, if we at one point use this, it can be easily used, but of course we need to go further to explore this this situation.
Next question is actually for Priscilla and for me, so I'll also hand it over to you after I answer the talk. It's an interesting question from how should we diagnose fluid depletion, bioimpedance, blood volume, BNP. And again, what we use in our unit is basically bioimpedance, and some patients are actually indeed fluid depleted before dialysis. After dialysis, it's more or less, if you want properly to attain pre-dialysis normal volemia, they need to be a little bit fluid depleted after. But what we showed in this study was actually to our surprise that pre-dialytic fluid depletion by bioimpedance was also associated with an adverse outcome. But when we took this a little bit further, actually, it seemed to be that this only held true, and we now submitted this to NDT as a review process. It only actually held true for patients who were both fluid depleted and had low systolic blood pressures. So I think bioimpedance is still a good tool to diagnose fluid depletion. Personally, I'm only inclined to react on that if you also have patients with low blood pressures or patients who have treatment intolerance. And if a patient is a little bit fluid depleted before dialysis and feeling absolutely fine, from this, let's say, more detailed data which we just analyzed, I do not worry so much. For blood volume, I will give this to Priscilla. For BMP, I would like to answer it. Brain natriuretic peptides is actually only, it increases in terms of when you have fluid overload or cardiac overload, but it doesn't decrease when you have fluid depletion. And we have done very old studies, I think it was in 1993, looking at atrial natriuretic peptide, and they're showing that it actually did not differentiate at all between fluid depleted and normal volemic patients, whereas it really differentiated between normal volemic and fluid overloaded patients. So as a tool to predict fluid depletion, I don't think that natriuretic peptides are important, whereas they are strong risk predictors for cardiac failure and overall mortality, because they're an indicator of cardiac overload.
Well, just to, I will say that, well, it's difficult to answer because when it comes to blood volume and we use bioimpedance, we're not actually measuring absolute blood volume with bioimpedance. So I think these two are not mutually excluded. It's not to measure one and not use the other because they're acting, like we've shown that this we need to look at to the two compartments, the plasma, the intravascular volume, and of course the interstitial space. So we cannot just say or assess fluid depletion just by measuring absolute blood volume or relative blood volume, whatever you use. We need the assessment of the overall fluid status in the body, meaning the interstitial space, the intravascular space, and the intracellular compartment, of course.
Thank you. I have one question for Dr. Kuman. I'm interested clinically, how will you handle inflammation? Let's say, which markers will you advise to be measured? Or let's say you have a patient with fluid overload or fluid depleted, malnourished perhaps, or with a trend to being malnourished. What will be your advice in that sense to assess this patient?
Clinically, I think for inflammation, CRP is basically sufficient for clinical reasons. It's a very powerful predictor of mortality. It reacts quite rapidly. If you don't have availability to for CRP, the neutrophil lymphocyte ratio might be an alternative. But CRP itself is, I think, very powerful, and the first thing you have to do, is there anything treatable in this patient? So, and also look at silent sources of infection like the fistula or and let's say the to do a real dental, have the patients having had a good dental examination. For nutritional state, bioimpedance is interesting. It is also related to outcome, low lean tissue index markers, but it's not well established everywhere. Subjective global assessment is of course okay, but it's often difficult to perform this in a clinical practice. So and albumin levels are a kind of a composite marker. Looking actually, going beyond a little bit beyond the question, look at the marker itself, I think also the time dependency is very important. For instance, I have new data, also in collaboration with RI, have shown that, for instance, if you have a decline in creatinine or a decline in albumin, that and if you look at this, let's say, from 1 year back, and you see gradual decline in albumin or creatinine, that these patients can be really at higher risk of mortality. So not only look at a single point in time, but also look at the time trends, because they can give you very powerful additional information.
Would you advise some routine measurement of inflammatory markers?
Yes, we do it in Holland. It's actually standard procedure to every 3 months CRP. I think it's good to do so. Sometimes you really can look into undetected sources of inflammation, and you also have baseline values to react upon and to have actually as a kind of a you can, for instance, if some patients have CRP levels of for instance 10 standard, and we don't find any source of infection of 15. But if they then increase, for instance, to 50 or 60, you really know that this is not something which is standard for this patient, but is something you should react on.
Okay. Thank you. Any more questions? Feel free to come to the microphone. Thank you very much.